Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Tombstone Podcast, podcast where we talk about video games, the video game industry, and whatever else we feel like talking about. My name is Devin.
I'm Kevin.
My name is Dominic.
And I'm Zach.
And before we get into our topic of this week, let's go round robin. What games have you been playing? What are you excited for? Yada, yada. Kevin.
Well, I'm excited for something that I just found out about the other day. Have you heard of the game The Wonderful 101?
No.
No.
It sounds familiar, but...
It was a Platinum Games developed pretty much launch title for the Wii U. It was being announced around the same time that the Wii U was like about to come out. And it's this weird fighting game where you control 101 people. It's a lot simpler than that. It was supposed to utilize the touchscreen and you like draw a shape and it makes you do a certain attack and all that sort of thing. The reason I mention that is there is a Kickstarter to port it because it did not succeed because the Wii U did not succeed. It's coming out for other platforms. It's already met the goals to be on Switch, PS4, and Steam. So I'm excited for that. I've already backed it to get two digital copies, one for Switch and one for PC. And I'm pretty excited to try that one out because I feel like it'll tickle my brain in the same way that Astral Chain did. Same developers, and it's like you're controlling multiple things at the same time. You kind of like move with one stick and then control something else with the other stick, and I feel like it'll kind of tickle my brain the same way. So I'm looking forward to giving it a shot when it comes out, and the ports should be coming out in like April, so it's pretty soon.
Fun stuff.
Yeah.
Fun stuff. Dominic, what you got for us?
I actually I've picked back up on Pokemon Sword because I put it down for a while because a couple other titles have had come out and taken some hiatuses and doing different things here and there. So decided to pick it back up and finally get through it and finally finish the game because everyone else is like, we're waiting on you. And I was like, well, best get in it now.
I also have not beaten it. Don't feel too bad.
But
everyone else we know has beaten it.
Yeah,
I don't even think I really want to play it. So you're at least one up on me.
I mean, it's fun. I really like this new version. It feels kind of samey with, of course, being a Pokemon game, but there's some unique stuff to it that I really like.
Well, if you're like me and you haven't played since Gen 2, it's like a whole new fucking world.
So
to me, look at all this new shit. So everyone else is like, yeah, that's actually like, we've had that for like a decade now. And yeah, that's actually kind of a downgrade of something we've had before. I'm like, man, this is all news to me.
Yeah, no, I think the last gen I played was like Ruby and Sapphire. So it's been a while since I've played anything.
that was objectively the pop off, and then afterwards, a lot of people I knew kind of fell off after Diamond and Pearl and beyond. But
yeah, I remember Diamond and Pearl being like the last big ones that everyone was playing.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's just like, of course, you have your your Pokemon fans who they're just gonna play a Pokemon game because it's a new Pokemon game. It's like,
yeah,
you know, it's like your Madden or FIFA fans, like,
and
they're gonna play it because it's a new one
for sure. And I'd like to see what's going on with some of the ones that I've completely neglected, like Black and White, and then Black 2 and White 2, and then Sun 2 and Moon 2, or they're like Ultra Sun and Moon.
Ultra Sun and Moon.
Yeah. But to me, it's like, I still don't understand the point of a sequel if it's the same stuff, but I don't remember.
For Black and White, it's completely different. It's an actual sequel.
Okay, gotcha.
What the fuck does that mean? That didn't answer his question.
it's not
like, oh, you had Ruby and Sapphire and then you had Emerald, which was like a sequel, but not really. It's the same game with a little bit extra. Black and White 2 are completely different. it's a takes place after the first one story wise, and you do everything backwards.
It's like an actual continuation. Okay, that sounds of really a story.
Weird.
Yes, it's a do completely backwards. Different game. Okay. You do it backwards, as in the city you started in the first one is actually where you end up in the last one.
I was going to say. One. I was going to say.
So it's not like a completely different game.
It's not
game.
A reverse difficulty
like,
curve. Yeah, they like remade the game, but it's in the same. It's in the same region, but there is another story.
Your Pokemon just sit
a
there.
A whole other league. All that shit. Well,
my yes. dumb.
Your Pokemon devolve.
I was
going to the game.
I was going to say.
They start like level 100.
You fucking Benjamin Button it.
Yeah. Yeah. My dumb ass was like, so you just release all of the Pokemon back into the
you
wild?
Just throw them out the window.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we don't need this anymore. Yeah, that's fun stuff. Zach, what you got for us?
Lately, I've been playing a lot of the new League of Legends card game, Legends of Runeterra. Been slowly climbing up the ranks, plan to get Diamond, but don't actually see that happening. But we'll see.
Yeah, what do you like about this game?
It's not really pay to win. So I can actually compete nice. Without spending money. And have,
yeah, because that's like my issue yeah. with like Hearthstone and everything. It's like same. You need to, like, you have to either get lucky and get good cards, or
more like
buy
just start,
cards.
Yeah, or just buy the dust to make the cards or whatever it is that they do. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's. So how do they do their? I guess like card. Do they do card packs and everything like that, or like?
It's not. It's,
what is their money model then?
There's chests like, that you can get. So it works sort of the same way as Hearthstone. Like you have daily quests and stuff you can get, and that'll get you points. And those points you can use, and it's like you choose a faction, and you can whenever you gain XP, you'll gain. XP for that faction, and then there's certain milestones you'll get chests or just straight up wild cards, and you progress it that way. And then in the store you can buy wild cards, but you're limited at the amount you can buy total. So it's like, sure, you can spend a little money and get a little ahead, but not really by much.
Is it free to play?
It is.
Oh, neat. Yeah, I agree with Devin. Look, the biggest drawback for me was the whole pay to win system that's usually found in a lot of these games, which is why I mean, like, even physical things like Magic and Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh and all that, you know, I get it. I understand it. Like, I understand it, and it's really interesting, like, the way the different rules are made for different cards, but like, to shuffle so much money into one pile, it's so hard for me to wrap my brain around.
Yeah, I couldn't do Hearthstone for that reason. I didn't mind doing Arena because that's like draft pick. Everyone, you know, has the same playing field. So that worked. Mm-hmm. But the general, basically, as soon as the game detected that I wasn't a complete peon, it paired me with people who actually knew what they were doing, and the people who knew what they were doing had way better cards than me, so I immediately got my shit rocked, and I was like, well, I'm better than the shit people, but I'm not that good, so I'm just in this fucking dead zone of pay money or you're just gonna get your ass stomped over and over.
It's
the same reason I can't go to like a Magic the Gathering tournament, because
they're
just the people who just they just have way too much money into it, and it's just like, all right, well, I have my like decade old elf deck that's okay. And then everyone else has like this $1,000 deck where I'm like, all right, I clearly don't stand a chance. So
yeah,
good to know that there's an alternative.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. What you been doing, Devin?
So I've been playing, of course, a lot of Apex Legends, trying to grind that ranked out. With the new season that's out, it's really, really fun. New champs fun. I like the map changes a lot. I'm getting better, I guess. I'm trying to get better, trying to get like a few kills a game at least. So hopefully the climb goes well. Other than that, I started playing this game called Observer, and it's supposed to be like this cyberpunk horror game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 10 minutes into the game. I have no idea what the fuck to do. I'm just locked in this room, and it's like, oh, you got to get to this, like, you got to, I went to this apartment because it was like my son called me, and I was able to like triangulate the call to this apartment. So I go into the apartment, and there's like a dead body in there. And I'm like, okay, no, it can't be my son. You know, let me find clues that maybe this isn't my son. And then it's like, oh, well, I triggered the apartment's security system, so it's a lockdown, so I can't get out. So I should use my, because you have an EM vision, you have like this other weird scanning vision, and then you have night vision. And you have to like use your EM vision to like look at like where the security system is and like follow some wires to a keypad, and the keypad, you know, you're able to use the keypad in order to turn off the alarm system. I have no idea what the fuck the code is. It's a 4-digit code, and it did some like weird little hacky thing, and it revealed the last digit is 4. Okay, that's good. Okay, so I was like, fuck it, 1, 2, 3, 4. That was not it, sadly.
Yeah.
So I had to find some sort of clue in this apartment as to what this, or find a different way to deactivate the security system other than what I'm thinking it is, which is just the keypad.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So I played about 20 minutes of it, and because I was playing a little bit of it, and then Chance got on. He's like, oh yeah, let's play some Apex. And then I got off of Observer, got on Apex, and then trying to fucking get Smite to run, but that's a lost cause.
Uh-oh.
Rip.
And then went back to Observer and just like trying, just using all of my visions, clicking on all the things, opening all the drawers and all of the whatever, move this aside, scan this, scan that. I don't fucking know.
You've just done like a full sweep of the game, and it turns up there's nothing there.
I'm like 10 minutes into the game. Like, this is literally the first thing that you do is like, you go to this apartment.
Goodness.
I'm fucking locked in there. Okay. Yeah. So that's what I've been doing. What's our fucking topic for today? What's our topic for this one?
Well, today, we are getting into just a little overview of The Legend of Zelda.
Okay.
We'll be starting our series on The Legend of Zelda, and, we won't go into specifics like dissecting each individual game. We can just talk about a couple different points that happen all over the place.
Well, were you gonna lead us?
Yeah, I'll take the helm for this. So of course, if you're unawares of The Legend of Zelda or the ins and outs with it, it's a fantasy RPG that's been going on for a little over like 30 years now. It's about the cyclical storytelling of a courageous hero that sort of goes through some trials and tribulations and tests of courage to eventually defeat this sort of ever-existing evil, right? And it's the way that they portray this, it's a little bit of it's pretty samey. Like, the motif is pretty much there for most of the time. Like, you will eventually fight Ganon or Ganondorf, right? And you're always playing as Link trying to save Zelda. So it's a little bit of the same cookie cutter cyclical like hero's tale through and through, but they have some differences, especially over 30 years of content. But I mean, it of course it begins with The Legend of Zelda, right, from 80 something. I forgot the release for it, but it was pretty amazing, being the first action fantasy RPG of the whole Zelda series. You know, it exploded, and it exploded for a lot of reasons. The one that stood out to me the most was something that I know that Devin, I know you appreciate this, the it just sort of throws you in it, and it doesn't really give you any sort of hints or hand holding or anything like that. It's just you start up the game and you create a file, and it starts. There's no story, there's no introductions, there's here you are. You're in the game. And you know that you can move around, you know that you can press buttons because you have the controller in your hand, but that's about it.
Yeah. It's important to note that this first game was meant to be the total counter opposite to Mario, which came out like a year or two prior. Mm-hmm. And you know, Mario is very linear. It starts you out on the left side of the screen, so it makes sense to go toward the right side of the screen. And no matter what you're doing, you go toward the right side of the screen. Your goal is clear. It's very obvious what to do. Mm-hmm. This game, this first Zelda, is meant to be the total opposite. So it, to immediately screw with your brain, it throws you right in the middle of a screen, and there you can go left, you can go up, and you can go right, and there's also a cave. So you have four options immediately. Yeah. And you're just like, just go. Just fucking go.
And if you don't choose the correct option, then the whole game sort of is at a standstill until you figure out what to do the right way.
Mm-hmm. It's up to you to poke around every little corner and go, oh, well, I have this. Well, now that I have this, oh, well, fuck. And I got all these other options that, you know, I know of all these obstacles that I can now overcome because I have this thing. And it just kind of like, it's like the very first like progenitor of like your Metroidvania style. Like, I got this thing, so I can do these things now. And that just reshapes how I think of the whole map.
Absolutely. So, and I mean, the most primitive form of that is the first decision that you do make when you enter the cave. They just say, hey, it's dangerous to go alone, take this, and he gives you the sword. And with that in mind, talking about like the sort of Metroidvania aspect that would come in the later years, it's like, it's so primitive because the first thing that you do with that sword, you already know, it's like, okay, now I gotta go fight shit. And so the objective that you figure out on your own is, well, let's go out and fight stuff and then see what happens. And you end up going through the caves and the dungeons and all that stuff on the way. And it was very unique because it, like we said, you know, there was little to no direction. There's a couple hints that they give you every now and again, but you have to find them on your own. And more important,
and they're also vague as fuck.
Yeah, yeah,
very poorly worded too. Yes,
easternmost peninsula is the key. It's a hint that's just like kind of put in there. And I believe what it was is that in the original Japanese, it's a completely different hint.
Yeah. So yeah, it's completely different. It was talking about on the original Famicom, there's a microphone. And you can yell into it to scare
the Poe, the Poe's voice, or whatever they are. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not a thing in the American version because the American Famicom or the Nintendo Entertainment System does not have the microphone. So there's just a devoted item for that. So that isn't a hint. So right. They're just like, the Eastmost Peninsula is the key. And I don't think anyone actually knows what the fuck that means.
There is no Eastmost Peninsula. There is no key. It's just there. It's just there.
Yeah. It's so indicative of working with what you have in the limitations of the NES, right? Because they could have given you some exposition. They could have given you something here and something there. But I mean, even then, like Mario, right? Like Super Mario Brothers, it's the same thing. You start on the left side of the screen. You only know that you're playing as Mario because his face and name is on the cover. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's it. And the only other thing that you glean from the game is your princess is in another castle. And you're like, oh, that's what we're doing.
you know what I mean? Oh, like, okay. Like, yeah, it's only clear like once you just kind of, I guess I'm going right. And then eventually like three or four levels in, you're like, oh, fuck, I'm saving a princess. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in fucking Zelda, it's you don't know what the fuck you're doing until you like complete the first dungeon. And it's like, here's the Triforce. And you can look at your menu and go, oh, there are more of these. Let's just get them all.
Yeah. Collect it all. And that's the thing. It's working with what you have, right? Showing you It actually, it's because we know when we talk about storytelling, there's telling people what's going on, and then there's showing people what's going on. And then there's this weird separate level that happens where they're like, you need to figure it out because we can only show you so much, right? Mm. So it's not for any like minimalistic approach, because they're not taking anything big and picking out small pieces of it. They're not minimalizing anything. They're working with everything that they have. And even then it's just like, all right, well, now we just got to fucking figure it out. But I appreciated what they did in the next couple games, because I mean they made Zelda 2, right? And then
which is a lot like the first one, except not at all.
Not at all. They took like all of the wrong features of the first one and put them in the second one.
And they made a fucking, they're like, you know what Zelda 1 didn't have? Let's just put all of those things in it. And it just,
RPG elements,
leveling, side-scrolling, platforming, and it's just like, what the fuck is this game?
Yeah, they really 180'd. I would venture to say that they 180'd because of Final Fantasy, you know? Because when I look at Zelda 2, I think of like a Final Fantasy clone, in a way.
Yeah, I could see that, because it's that very old-school style of RPG where it's like you're on the map and it's an overworld and... Yup, you're in an encounter, now you gotta do it. But then they also did like encounters in a more Nintendo way, where it's like, all right, well, now you're in this situation and you're playing, you know, it's not like menu driven combat. It's like, oh, now it's side scrolly and you gotta fight these dudes and run away.
Yeah.
So it's like halfway between like Mario and it's halfway between Mario and Final Fantasy and almost nothing like
right,
Zelda
right.
Original.
Which, I mean, we can talk about some offshoots, right? I mean, there was, jumping forward a couple years, right? There's Link's Crossbow Training.
That was like a tech demo that they were like, we could sell this.
Let's make a game out of it, out of a tech demo. They've done that a couple times, though. They've done that for Link's Crossbow Training. They did it for, I'd venture to say they did it for Triforce Heroes, too. The 3DS.
I would say that that's a spinoff. I would say that's a spinoff in the style of the original Four Swords, because there's Four Swords and Four Swords Adventures. Which, yeah, Four Swords absolutely. Adventures is a full fucking game. Which, Four Swords was like this like bundled package thing you would get with Link's Awakening DX.
Oh, was it Link's Awakening or was it A Link to the Past?
You're right. It was a Link to the Past for the Game Boy. And it came bundled with Four Sword, and you could only play it with four people with a copy of the game and a GameCube, Game Boy, and a four-way link cable. And
yeah,
so no one fucking played it until they re-released that on the Nintendo 3DS, like as like free shovelware essentially. Yeah. And then you could play with like the wireless. And I mean, if we want to get into like the fucking weirdest offshoot, in my opinion, it's what was the name of
Warriors?
It? No. Although yes. Yes, that is a weird spinoff, but there was a fucking Tingle game.
Yes. Oh, it is called, I actually just had it pulled up.
Please.
Hold up. It's called Ripened Tingle's Balloon Trip of Love. Was a 2009 release for the Nintendo DS.
Yep.
In other words, yeah, let me just hold up. Irozuki Tingle no Koi no Balloon Trip is an adventure video game developed by Vanpool and published by Nintendo for the DS. It's a sequel. Okay. we'll put that to bed. Yeah, that's fucking weird.
Yeah, so we have a few offshoots, not as many as other series tend to have. Like Mario series has a shitload of spinoffs and shit, but like, and honestly, we didn't get many spinoffs until like Link's Crossbow Training, and they were like, "All right, well, let's kind of go off the rails, you know, and let's just kind of put Link in Mario Kart and, you know, do this and do, you know, they started kind of going off the rails at that point. But for a while, it was just like main series installation. We're not fucking around with this.
Right, right. And at a certain point, I think by the time A Link to the Past released, that's when they sort of declared, like from then until, you know, we get crossbow training and other stuff like that. Once they started producing these titles that have stood as some of the best in a lot of categories, right? Like when they made A Link to the Past, they changed it all over again. They did a complete 180 all over, and they took the sort of daunting and harrowing elements from Zelda 1, and for it being out on Super Nintendo, because I believe it was Super Nintendo first and then Game Boy.
Yes.
I think. Yeah. When they did it for Super Nintendo, that's when you ended up having titles like Metroid and, I mean, so many other different things that came out where they're like, okay, now we have lore, we have story, we have implications for the future, we have spin-off, we have like a different take on the BBEG. Like, the whole thing was different. Instead of saving like one princess, you're saving like, what is
there
it?
I think... like there are well, there's like three pendants, and then
yeah, and then seven shards,
maidens.
I believe.
Seven shards of there's seven. I think
there's
seven maidens.
Okay.
Yeah, there's seven maidens. There's three pendants, seven maidens, and then Zelda.
Yep.
Yeah.
And yes. But I mean, what A Link to the Past was, in my opinion, it was the jump start of like of Zelda becoming like some of the like one of the best series is out there. Like Zelda 1 exploded, of course, because it was revolutionary for its time and different things like that. But once so many other titles came out, this was the point where they were like, well, now people have to compete with Zelda instead of the other way around. And I know Link to the Past is regarded, it's probably my top five, I'd say, because
it's most people would consider it the best of the series. Like a lot of people, well, at least people who grew up with it would say it's probably the best of the series.
Right.
I'm one of those people.
Yeah, and just because of how much it brought to the table, you know, it's like it divides the game into two very, very critical sections. And in both of those sections, you have these different themes here and there, narrative-wise. Like, there's so much that got put into this game that started as a foundation for the rest of the games. And then they made so many different titles that either stuck with that and really stood out as like best overall, and then there were some that were like, eh, they're Zelda titles, kind of like what we talked about in the beginning,
like the Zelda CDI games,
like the
Nintendo didn't make those. Those were a mistake.
Yeah, those should have never been made to begin with.
Yeah, holy crap, those were some just wonky titles, man.
Largely, I just ignore their existence entirely.
Yeah, because there's no point in trying to like add that to the mix of Zelda games that are, well, firstly that are canon, and then secondly that actually like matter, even if they're bad games. Like they're just no one needs to worry about them. And if you've been plagued with understanding what those games are like, I'm sorry. And if you haven't, watch Game Grumps, because it was funny when they did it. But I mean, there were some other 2D titles that I knew weren't super popular, but were pretty good before they did the before they really did the 3D switch. I mean, Oracle of Seasons and Oracle of Ages were my favorites for a long time.
Yeah, those were I think those were the first ones made by Capcom.
Yes.
Capcom made those. I don't know, Zach, do you know, Link's Awakening came out before that. Was that also made by Capcom?
I'm not sure who made that one.
Okay. It's just that they look exactly the fucking same. So
yeah,
in my brain, I'm like, it must have been made by Capcom. I don't know. Take that with a grain of salt. But Oracle of Ages and Seasons were made by Capcom. I remember those from when I was a kid. And that was like the first time, and I think the only time, that Zelda did the fucking Pokemon thing. Except these are two totally different games.
Yeah.
They have I'm pretty sure a totally different overworld map, but they also have different core mechanics, different stories, different characters.
Yeah.
And I personally remember getting Oracle of Ages because it was blue, and my favorite color is blue. And there is no other reason. And that is about it.
Well, I wonder, I wonder if it came out after Ocarina of Time.
I think Oracle of Ages and Seasons came out after Ocarina of Time, but Link's Awakening, I think, came out before Ocarina of Time.
Gotcha.
But like, it was one of those, it's one of those ones that like bridged a gap. Yeah. That happens a lot in the Zelda series where they just have one that bridges a gap. Like Triforce Heroes bridged a gap between Skyward Sword and Breath of the Wild. It just kind of came out and people were like, oh, okay, this can tide me over. Zelda 2 was kind of that because no one really cared about it. Link's Awakening did that. And it's just like, there are some in the series, like Phantom Hourglass, you know, not a lot of people were way into that. And Spirit Tracks, not a lot of people were way into that one. There are just some, they're still main series games, but they just kind of didn't get a lot of attention for one reason or another.
Right.
And so people just think it goes straight from A Link to the Past to Ocarina of Time. Just like nothing else. Who cares?
Yeah, I mean, I loved Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks. So I was one of those that eventually when a Zelda game came out, I was obligated morally to play it.
That's kind of funny because Phantom Hourglass, keep in mind that I have played and beaten Zelda 2 three times.
Yeah.
Phantom Hourglass is the first Zelda game that I just said, I don't want to play this anymore. And I put it down.
Oh my God.
I remember liking Phantom Hourglass. I thought it was a nice game. I don't remember too much of it. But
I like the puzzles in it.
Yeah. I thought the puzzles were really nice.
I didn't mind the puzzles, and I liked that you could draw your little map. That was like the most interesting thing about it. But I don't know, something about it. I played a half an hour of it, and I said, all right. maybe it's my distaste for handhelds. I'm not huge on handheld consoles.
Sure.
So I was just kind of like, eh.
Which I mean, I think of it this way. It's one of those, to me, it feels like one of those tech demo games, right?
But they were trying to stretch the DS as far as it could go with that. Like, what can we do with this dual screen shit?
But they're like brain aging, ain't cutting it anymore.
Yeah, the fucking famous puzzle
close
that like
the DS.
Yeah, Zach accidentally found out after being frustrated.
What was it?
In one of the dungeons at the very end, you get a map piece, but it's reversed, and it's like, I don't know what to do with this map piece. Transfer it to your real map, and then that's all it really says, and you don't know what to do. You push all the buttons, you click a bunch of things, you walk around the room, nothing works. The solution to the puzzle is to, while you're inspecting that on your top screen, open up your map on the bottom screen and then close your DS. And then when you open it back up, you just press the top pass.
And just closed it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but you're just like, fuck this, I'm done.
Yeah, because you put the DS to sleep by just closing it, and I was like, I'll figure this out later, and I closed it, and then when I came back like a few hours later and opened it, it was done. I was like, okay, sure.
But beautiful. I mean,
what an interest to me. It's like, what an interesting way to work with the technology that you have. You know what I mean? Like, Link's crossbow.
It is undoubtedly interesting.
Yeah,
but like it was. It's really hard to figure out that one at least.
Yeah, I mean, because like Link's crossbow training was like the Wii remote is a motion controlled remote. Let's play with it. You know, and then when the Wii remote technology became Wii Motion Plus, they were like, we need a technological benchmark for Wii Motion Plus. And then they made Skyward Sword, which unfortunately no one, it was objectively considered the worst.
Well, that one is actually kind of complicated because there are a good handful of people. Actually, like, I would say it's split right down the middle. I would say it's roughly 50-50. 50% of people adore the game for its, like, its narrative and, like, the swaying music and, like, all the aesthetic qualities to it. The part that makes it, like, a linear story and the, like, all the parts that are, like, Zelda, you know, that's exploration and this and that. It's like all of that got thrown right out the fucking window. Mm-hmm. And so it's like this really clear divide between what some people see as Zelda and what other people see as Zelda, which is something that we'll get to
for sure
right after this ad break.
Bam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. All right. do you want to get back to it? Is everyone good?
Yeah, we can get back to it whenever the fuck.
Go ahead, Dominic, lead us.
All right. All right. Wait, hold on.
All right, wait.
All right.
It's not that hard. Right. Welcome back.
I got it.
We're just gonna, Dominic, right. Look, we're back from the ad break. Right. Fucking bring us into more shit with the Zelda series, please.
Sure thing.
Fucking killing me.
Welcome back, guys. So we're gonna get right into it. We're gonna talk about Ocarina of Time next because we were talking a little bit about how Skyward Sword was the sort of line between what people thought as like good Zelda game or bad Zelda game, and we also sort of saw that separator with Breath of the Wild, but we can get to that later as well. But the main one that is being talked about the most still is Ocarina of Time. It was the first 3D Zelda game. It was for the Nintendo 64, which had so many it had such a technological advancement compared to, you know, Super Nintendo and then Game Boy and such. And it being the first 3D Zelda had so many groundbreaking things about it. Not necessarily in the scope of like the narrative, because we've seen some of the same, you know, cyclical narrative stuff, but mechanic wise, it was totally different because you had to think about everything in a totally new, in a new space, you know. It's regarded as like it's now the number two Zelda game, but I mean, since its release in like what, 96 97, it was the best, number one hands down best game of all time for a long time, just in terms of rankings. I'll leave it up to you guys, but like, I don't think it's the best, but I still appreciate it being this huge groundbreaking benchmark. But I want to know what you guys think as well.
I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but as far as I'm aware, none of us think it's the best Zelda game flat out.
Not anymore.
We all do generally think that it, at least I definitely do, that it was hugely innovative and set a lot of precedent, good and bad, for the series and gaming as a whole. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of mechanical stuff in it, like this is the first time a multi-action button has ever been introduced in a game. The A button does like a million billion different things based on the context. This is the first thing that's happened.
Yeah.
First time like a, maybe not a day-night cycle, but like you can see time progressing when you're in the overworld. It, like you can see the sun rising and setting at like Mach 5, mm-hmm. by the way.
Yeah, it's 5 minutes. 5 minutes per day cycle.
Yeah, and it's hugely revolutionary, and what it introduced is it's a Zelda that still very much has a lot of exploration, and but it also introduced this big like sort of bombastic, like this is a world like impacting narrative, like Link is gonna save the world, you know, like it just felt so grand and big with all the music and all these characters and story moments, and it, like, in a way that A Link to the Past couldn't accomplish with its technology, like, it had that factor to it where it had the literal story, the literal narrative,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't have the tools at hand to, like, really sell, like, a cinematic moment. It was just kind of, like, text scrolling on the screen, like, hey, blah, 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 and the magic and the princess and the pearls and the magic and the master sword, and it's like, all right, we get it.
Yeah.
With Ocarina of Time, you can feel it more because there are more tools at their disposal, and they're really figuring out how to emotionally provoke a viewer or a player. So this is the first time, like, the narrative is being considered an important component of a Zelda game. And that kind of is that delineation that we've hinted at is, you know, to some people, particularly people who started with Ocarina of Time, they think that, like, the narrative is the reason it's what makes a Zelda game a Zelda game. You know, it's like, it's the narrative, it's the dungeons, it's, you know, it's these set piece moments that make a Zelda game a Zelda game. And other people, you know, who are arguably old school, still view it the old way of, like, well, it's just this big world, and yeah, there's a story, but it's about the world, you know? So that's, This is the first mark of, you know, it's kind of pleasing both crowds, and it causes that sort of, I don't want to say confusion, but that sort of difference in perspective of what is a Zelda game.
Absolutely. I mean, shit, well said. Like, is there anything that Devin or Zach want to add to that, or?
I don't think it's aged that well.
Yeah.
Hot take.
I think going back and playing the original one, the N64, just like going back and playing Super Mario 64 sucks. It's bad. The camera sucks. The controls suck. It's hard to look at anything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's aged well at all.
That whole era of games didn't age very well. It aged about as well as you could hope compared to the other things of that era.
Sure.
But it's still, like, rough. Like you said with Super Mario 64, it's just like, you get it. There's a lot of really innovative stuff, and it's very tight, and, like, there's a lot of good qualities to it, but they were still just figuring out 3D space.
Right.
So it's like there are a few little wonky things here and there. It doesn't look very good. It's highly polygonal. There's all these, like, weird sort of experiences that you run into with just
the game not working how you wanted it to work.
Yeah, the game not working that well. Like, very minor glitches. I mean, this is a pretty solid game, but, like, there are still things that act a little wonky and move a little wonky.
Yeah.
It just feels not great, and it doesn't look very great.
That's my opinion of, like, most games from before, like, twin stick movement. Like, most games before then, before we decided, oh, you can move with the left analog and move the camera with the right analog. Before then, before we got to that point, playing 3D games sucks. It's a lot of tank controls. It's a lot of, especially with the N64 games, it's a lot of snap-on camera where you, like, Z to snap the camera to, like, face forward. It's a lot of doing that bullshit, and it sucks. It's not good. It takes a lot to get used to, and it's not as fluid as it is with twin sticks and being able to independently move the camera wherever you want it to move.
Right.
You know, it's... I've tried plenty of times to play Ocarina of Time, and I'm trying to think of how far I've gotten. I've never gotten even to, like, Adult Link. I just get so bored and just frustrated playing it that I can't.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah.
But I would venture to say, though, I mean, it's definitely a little bit more of a frustrating experience now that we've been accommodated with some better technology.
Now that we know better, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, even then, people have defended it in spite of that, like, very, very adamantly, you know, because of what we talked about earlier with those particularly defining moments that we have in the narrative, but then also there's the themes around, like, this was one of the first big, like, coming of age games too, because you have this boy, right? You have a boy who's trying to figure out his identity because he knows that he's something different, and then he's faced with basically adulting and then nutting the fuck up and then trying to defeat the big bad evil guy. So it's the story is so meaningful for so many people because it was one of the first true coming of age stories that we saw in a video game that allowed that narrative to be told pretty well.
Yeah, like if you're a kid and you feel like you don't fit in, which is like every damn kid, yeah. And you're in this situation where you're like, fuck, why don't I fit in? And this is like the ultimate fantasy for that. It's like, well, you don't fit in because it's like you're different. And not only are you different, you're the fucking chosen hero of time.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it resonates with a lot of people, especially, you know, a lot of people who that's their first Zelda game. They probably played it at an age where that's a really powerful narrative to them.
Right.
And you can't shake that. Like, it's not the first Zelda game I played. But I did play it pretty early on,
yeah.
And I loved it for those like incredible narrative beats that it had, even though now I would, you know, I have different emphasis on different ideas and concepts in a game. But when I was younger, it's like that's all it needed, you know?
Yeah.
And when it's about as good as 3D gets at the time, it's like, well, I can deal with it. Yeah. I can deal with the controls. They're okay. It's still definitely wonky, but like if you're comfortable with it, you can see it through rose-tinted glasses easily. And I think that's where a lot of the unending praise comes from, is just we can't criticize it because it was so impactful. It's like, well, it was so impactful. Let's acknowledge that. But also,
yeah,
here are these criticisms.
I always hate when I hate anything that's like that's it's sacrilegious to attack it. It's like, I respect Ocarina of Time for what it was and how game breaking it was, and well, not game breaking, game changing, and it literally changed how we like make games and think about it. And it's the same argument with like the Beatles. Like, you can't shit talk the Beatles because you wouldn't really have modern music without the Beatles. But it's like, okay, I get that. But I still don't care for the Beatles that much, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hugely important.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's hugely important, but it's able to be criticized. And I totally agree. And I like I said, it's not my favorite Zelda game by a country mile, actually. I don't even think it's in my top five. But it's good.
Yeah.
At least for what it did at the time. But I can acknowledge that there's definitely a lot of flaws with it now, especially.
Well, sure.
Because, like, to me, like, we've done better in the series since then.
For sure. In a lot of what's interesting is that, you know, even between the four of us, what we consider to be those next steps are, in some cases, wildly different games. You know, I know that Kevin, I know you very much dislike Twilight Princess. Was that right? Or,
I don't incredibly hate it. I think it's remarkably mediocre.
Gotcha. Whereas I consider it like my top five. You know, it's just we look at these games in so many different ways for so many different reasons. And I think that's what makes them good games. It's that it's kind of like literature or kind of like poetry or kind of like or like music. You know, people can look at individual game. Like series, not necessarily like games overall, but we can look at an individual series or an individual title and we're able to criticize it, you know, because that's the thing. A lot of people have immortalized Ocarina of Time and they're like, no, it's the best because it's Ocarina of Time. It's like the Batman syndrome, which it's like, but he's Batman, but it's like, okay, yeah, but there's so many limitations there, you know, and we've gone into so many of these limitations, you know. For me, it is like the tightness, the sometimes shit just does not work how you want it to work, you know. But I still very much respect it for what it has done narratively, because it's also a long game too. It's like a really, really long game.
especially considering the time.
Yeah.
You know, like, games were not that long back then. And if they were, it was through some, like, bullshit grindy mechanics. You know?
Right. This was, like, this was
games just story. Were not that long.
Yeah. And because it's like, whereas A Link to the Past was, you have the three pendants and then the seven things. In this case, you have the three, like, crystal, you have the three gemstones or whatever, and then you have the seven medallions. So it kind of looks the same, but the map is so large. The way that you go around is a little slower too, and you cover the whole map like three times over, trying to get everything and trying to find all the different songs and the different this and that, because there's so many collectibles now that you have to do as well. Like, it just it brought so much to the table as far as like what you want in a game. And with a lot of these new, with a lot of even more recent RPGs, like, there's crafting materials that you have to go out and find. There's optional collectibles that you have to go out and find, or you don't have to, but still, there's so many options that, and so much agency that you have as a player. And it started from games like Ocarina of Time, which is why I think so many people respect it. But I mean, people have done mini series on just Ocarina of Time, so I think we can put a pin in it.
I think we've beaten that horse.
If we wanted to do a devoted episode down the line, that's a whole other issue. But for now, we're
good. I just wanted to touch upon a little bit on, because we're still just sort of going a little bit more overviewing, or we attempted to. I mean, the way that these games have developed, even past Ocarina of Time, right? It began to me with this terrifying nightmarescape of Zelda 1, where you're like, when you start up the game, you start playing and you have no idea what's going on. And then it sort of had some ups and downs, where you eventually got into these games that were literally go here next, literally go here next, get this thing, mm-hmm. get, like, and it kind of started with Ocarina of Time, but I can see why a lot of people don't really like Twilight Princess that much, because what comes to mind for me is get the slingshot to defeat the first dungeon, get the boomerang to get the water dungeon, like,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say that
linearity, there's no really definite starting point for that linearity, mm-hmm. I would say, because even as early as like A Link to the Past, it's like, yeah, you can do the light world in whatever order you want, more or less. It's the dark world, it like literally is like numbered, it has like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, like do it in this order, and you can sequence break a little bit. But it's like it like the suggestion of, hey, maybe you should do it in this order. And even all the way back into Zelda 1, it's like you have dungeon 1, dungeon 2, dungeon 3. Like, right. There's like a suggestion. And then in Ocarina of Time, it's like, well, there's only one way to go through all the dungeons. And there might be like a couple little things you could do out of order, but like, okay.
Yeah.
And then Wind Waker is like, all right, you can only go here. Now you can only go here. Now you can only go here. Okay, now you can explore the ocean.
Yeah.
And like, it just, it slowly narrows its view more and more and more until you get to something like Skyward Sword that says, this is literally the only way you can go.
Yeah. And we also had those other ones that we mentioned, like Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks, that, even though you did have some of the free roaming aspects that you even found in Ocarina of Time, Twilight Princess, Wind Waker especially, because Phantom Hourglass is supposed to be right after Wind Waker, narratively, it's like you have a couple options for you to do what you'd like in certain places, more specifically for like crafting materials and other upgrades, but it did become so railroady that you can definitely see why so many people just either really liked Skyward Sword for some reasons, but then didn't like it for what stands out to me the most is you have to go here. It's very, very railroady, very, very linear, but you're still in a world that you can explore relatively freely, like the clouds and the islands above the clouds and stuff like that. Like, but what I loved though is that after a certain point, they listened. And they heard the criticisms about linearity and about how an adventure RPG shouldn't be so railroaded. And they also took the strengths of, you know, difficulty and with player choice and player agency, and they put them together in Breath of the Wild, which was supposed to be, you know, they've coined it as they're like, you know, kind of returning to our roots and, you know, different things like that, where you see, not only do you see like callbacks, because they've done that a couple times, like Skyward Sword had like very, very large callbacks to the other games, but Breath of the Wild had them as well, but they did it in a little bit more tasteful way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's that returning to your roots thing that is at the heart of what I considered that big delineation between what one person views it, the series, and how everybody else, you know, someone else will view it. And it's that sort of, is it a fantasy narrative hero's journey thing, or is it an exploration game? You know, like, which is it? You know,
right.
And I will give Skyward Sword this. It is the most bombastic, over-the-top, like, world-changing, like, narrative. Like, there are a lot of emotional, personal stakes in the narrative. If you allow yourself to get swept up in, like, the soundtrack and the characters and stuff, it's like, it's got a narrative. It's just that, like, I would argue, personally, that that's not what makes a Zelda game. You know, what makes a Zelda game is discovery. It's look at the horizon. Like, I see this thing, I want to go to it, you know. And that's what they had in mind for Breath of the Wild. It was just, I can see that thing, I'm gonna go to it, you know. Like, it's just a total 180. And so, you know, hey, I like that they're doing that. I like that they're sticking with that interpretation rather than the one they've been going down and slowly leaning towards ever since Ocarina of Time.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on the Breath of the Wild experience or anything like that?
I really enjoyed Breath of the Wild. It was the first Zelda game I've played since Twilight Princess, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was really enjoyable to play. I still haven't beaten it. There's definitely low points to it. There's a lot of meaninglessness. Like, I wish that they actually had dungeons, per se, and not just the shrines. The shrines were a little bit eh. Like, they could have changed them up to make them a little bit more unique. But other than that, it is a really fun game. It is totally about exploring. If you love the world of Legend of Zelda and, like, Hyrule and all of that, Breath of the Wild is such a fun, fantastic game. And I'm excited to see whatever they have coming up next. I'm ready for this next Breath of the Wild 2 or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, what's interesting to me is I'm trying to figure out how they're going to approach Breath of the Wild 2. In that, like, is it essentially going to be the same assets and the same everything, with the exception of, like, a different story? And with that comes with, like, a couple changes? Or is it going to be kind of like Majora's Mask, where it took everything from Ocarina of Time, literally, like, asset-wise, and just made a whole different game out of it? And made a whole new map, tighter mechanics, a little bit more processing power and stuff like that. Like, I want to see how mechanically this game is supposed to be so different, you know. And if they do just say, hey, look, it's essentially Breath of the Wild 1, but with a couple changes, then, I mean, I don't know. I'll have to see how it works out narratively then. But
I'd like to see a little bit more focus on I'd like to see, like, a more focus on Zelda and Link's relationship, and a little bit more structure to it. Like, Breath of the Wild, one of the good things is that it's so open-ended. One of the bad things is that it's so open-ended.
Yeah.
I would like to see a little bit more structure. It's nice to be able to say, what the fuck is that over there? I'm going to go look at that. It's cool and everything like that. They do try to gatekeep you in that. It's like, oh, you can't really climb this because you don't have enough stamina or what have you, but you can easily cook and make elixirs to give yourself enough stamina to do whatever you want, or to give yourself enough health or enough attack to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So I would like to see it refined and a little bit more structure to it, but still keep it, keep that exploration in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to see, because there are definitely flaws with Breath of the Wild, of course, just with everything. But what I want to see, and what I think they'll do with Breath of the Wild 2, is they're going to kind of take the same engine, but make tweaks to it. You know, like they have that, you know, touted chemistry engine or whatever, where just things interact with each other. They're probably going to tweak a little bit of how that works. I know a big complaint was like the fucking rain basically makes it like impossible to do anything. So they'll maybe refactor that a little bit, maybe refactor this, add some new things to the engine and, you know, kind of work on that. And I would probably suspect that they're going to have a different like map, because at this point, I pretty much have that whole Hyrule mapped out in my brain. So they almost have to go somewhere else. I feel like you said, it might be Majora's Mask style. I don't know if they'll reuse assets, or at least not like blatantly like Majora's Mask did. But I think it'll be, at least my hope is that it'll be a whole separate new map, whole separate new narrative, similar chemistry engine with some tweaks to it, and hopefully a slightly more focused experience.
For sure. I wanted to ask one closing question, if there was nothing else that we wanted to really get into this episode.
I think we're good.
Yeah. I was going to ask, what if you were to pick one, because I know we talked about maybe top fives and stuff like that. If you were to pick one, what do you think would be your favorite?
If we're picking, wait, are we just picking favorite Zelda games now?
Yeah, if you were to have to pick one out of like whatever sort of top three or top five that you might have in mind.
Oh, definitely Link to the Past is my all-time favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. It's just, it's fucking perfect. Not really, but I really do enjoy the shit out of that game. It's just a lot of fun.
I mean, it has such a replay value, right? Like,
there's so much exploration that you can do in such a small world. It's insane.
Yeah,
I love it. There's so many, especially whenever you get to, was it Death Mountain, right? Yeah. It's like whenever you get to that area, there's just so many little nooks and crannies and cracked walls, and it's crazy just the different places you can go in that one little area. Mm-hmm. And then think of that throughout the whole map, and then think of how the map changes between going between Light World and Dark World, and then you also have to map that out and say, okay, if I want to go find this heart piece, I have to stand here, switch over to the Dark World, then go over here, then switch back to the Light World, and then like hop over this ledge and switch back to the Dark World, and then here's the heart piece. It's like, it's crazy how interconnected those worlds are and how much creativity they've had with making those two different worlds. I love it.
Yeah, not only did they make a more dense, not only is A Link to the Past more densely woven than Ocarina of Time, but they also use the two worlds sort of scheme a lot better in that game.
For sure. I love what they did with A Link Between Worlds as well. Like, it was such a beautiful refresh with some new ideas and stuff.
A Link Between Worlds is incredible.
Yeah. What about you, Kevin? What would you say?
Oh God, this one's tough for me, and I don't want to be basic about it, but it's probably got to be Breath of the Wild, if I'm being honest. It's my number one because it just focuses on that just discovery, because, you know, a lot of people would say exploration, and I would say more specifically it's about discovery. And Breath of the Wild has so many mechanics, so many different little things, how things interact, what you can do, how things affect other things. There's so much discovery in that game that it just, it blows me away. And there, over time, I'll probably talk about my other ones. Like, my top three are really close in competition.
Mm-hmm.
But Breath of the Wild is probably my number one.
Yeah. What about you, Zach?
Mine would probably have to be Link's Awakening. It's just one of the first ones that I've played. And then I've just always been a fan of the, like, 2D top-down more than the 3D.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I mean, Link's Awakening was really interesting because it to me just it felt like the odd one out. It's the same thing, but there's just so many different, like, weird additions that they put in, like weird changes, like with characters and with different callbacks, like, because they made a couple callbacks to, like, to Super Mario, right?
They have a lot.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, really unique as a title because of how on the nose it felt to me. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the item mechanic thing where you just have two items on A and B.
Mm-hmm.
One of those you can dedicate to a jump. One of those could be your sword, or you can have neither of those and just run around with whatever. And then
bombs, like, and arrows.
Yeah, and then all the combinations, like bombs and arrows. If you shoot a bomb and an arrow at the same time, you shoot a bomb arrow.
Really?
If you dash and jump at the same time, you'll do, like, a long super jump. There's, like, a lot of things like that just kind of hidden in there.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
No way.
Yeah, it definitely, like, it innovated more than it gets credit for. And to me, like, Link's Awakening, I haven't quite beaten it yet, but it's been hinting at this, like, whole, like, dream world thing that I think is, like, a really interesting narrative thing. And it's not really, like, wasting your time with it. It just kind of, like, pops into your head, like, hey, like, what if this is all a dream? What if it's not real? And then you're kind of left to think about that while you explore the world alone. I just kind of, I like the feeling atmospherically of that game,
mm-hmm.
how you just have, it's got a mood about it.
Yeah.
Big mood.
I've completely forgot about Link's Awakening or, like, the in-betweens of it, because I never really did play it a whole lot.
I need to replay it again.
Honestly, same. Like, yeah, but it coming out when it did, having this unique mechanic of, like, item synergy, like, I would have never expected that. And you were exactly right, Kevin. I think it's one of those games that innovate a lot more than it gets credit for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I would probably pick Breath of the Wild as my number one. But it, to me, it's like, you, like, kind of with you, Kevin, my top three is so, or probably my top five is so difficult to pick one out of the five, because there are so many meaningful moments that I've personally gathered from all these different games. You know, it's tough for me to pick one, but the reason why I would probably add on and say Breath of the Wild as well is because it was, like, maybe the year before it came out, we were in this phase where we were playing Dungeons and Dragons, right? It's a little bit of an offshoot, but, like, we were playing D&D, and we all we all had these sort of ideas of what other universes can we do this in, you know, because of course there's, like, the Star Wars RPG and a couple other things like that that were big interests of ours. But I know Devin and Zach, you guys were pretty much re-envisioning the RPG, like, mechanical setting, and tried mm-hmm. to and began to start up, like, Fallout as a pen and paper, yeah. which blew me away.
There's a lot,
yeah.
There's
a lot more work than I anticipated.
Oh boy, and it's still not done. It's still sitting in my Google Drive. I need to look at
Same.
It. Oh god.
Yeah. But and while we were doing that, I know Joseph ended up completing his own little system of mechanics and made his own mythos around it too, and just, like, basically started up with some, of course, like, what is it just taking bits and pieces from a few different styles of RPGs and whatnot and made his own mythos. But my little the one that I was working on intensively was A Legend of Zelda RPG, and it took mechanics from 4th edition, it took mechanics from 5th edition, and I know Devin, you helped me out by taking mechanics from like Binding of Isaac and from Realm of the Mad God and from maybe like two other games like that. And I want to say that it was playtestable and like we were ready to start it. And my vision was an open world Zelda experience with all these towns that are working kind of like how they do with other Zelda games, but just in this huge, huge, huge environment. And then Breath of the Wild came out and I was like, well, that sort of takes my idea and makes it a multi-million dollar project that was already that was already incepted like years before I thought of it. And but that resonated with me a lot more than most of these other games, because it was exactly what I was thinking, and then so much more with all the different mechanics and stuff they put in. Yeah, it was so much more than I imagined, but it was also exactly what I was thinking of when I was trying to make an RPG.
Yeah, Breath of the Wild is like, it's the Zelda game that, as a kid, I was like, this is kind of what I would want it to be, but like at the same time, I was like, that'll never work. You know, there's like reasons why it won't work. Blah 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 blah. You know, it's like this vague idea I had in my brain since playing like Twilight Princess for the first time. Like I had played enough of them at that point that I was like, what if this was just like fucking huge and you could collect all these items and then make stuff with these items? And then like, oh, what if you like had like an open-ended puzzle system where just shit just acts the way like a sandbox. Mm-hmm. And basically that idea that I was just like, man, if only it could be this. And then it was, and that's what Breath of the Wild was. Yeah.
But man,
all right.
I know we have planned, we are going to go into the games that we've talked about as our favorites, and then make, of course, a whole bunch of connections to the other games, but absolutely stay tuned for that, because we plan on really pushing this series to how we prefer it. Is there any other last minute things we want to say about the Zelda series overall before we wrap up?
Nope, I'm good.
Yeah, I think we pretty much covered it. But thank you guys so much for checking in. This is the start of a series that I'm personally very excited about. I'd love to hear all of your delineations on what is your favorites and why. Please let us know what you think. We would appreciate, sending us some love. You can give us some good reviews on Apple Podcasts. That would be super helpful. If you want to reach out to us, you can check us out on Twitter. We're Tombstone_pod. And on Instagram, we're Tombstone_podcast. You can also see us on Spotify, Google Podcast, all over the place. But to our main distributor, we're of course done under Anchor, which is a wonderful, wonderful little thing that allowed us to do this. And that's our page, anchor.fm/tombstone-podcast. And you can even send us a monetary support if you'd like as well. That would be off the wall, and we would appreciate that very much. But thank you guys so much for checking this out. And we will see you next time.